welcome to the worldwide broadcast of the Ted and Austin Brower Show, bringing you the latest world news and health research. It's a wonderful day down here in Sunshine, Florida. I hope everybody else in the rest of the world is doing fantastic. Have some interesting articles to start off with here today. And, Daddy, you were telling me about one before the show started. What do you want to open with today?
Well, I have a good friend of mine who's a former college football player, very, very large alpha male, very good shape. I mean, the guy's in, he works out. I mean, he's a guy's guy, right? And he sent me this article about male college students to undergo critical self-reflection of masculinity. And this is an article by Beeman out of the University of Mobile, and he wrote it on the University of Wisconsin. Now, this is so weird to me that I had to read it to you guys so you don't think I'm making this stuff up, because their goal is to create a sense of security and vulnerability. Now, I don't even know what that even means. The goal is to create a sense of security and vulnerability, so I guess they want the guys to be able to cry, hold their teddy bears, and play with Play-Doh. I guess I don't know what this is all, but let me read you this. Guys, this is going to blow your mind. Listen to the terms they use. The University of Wisconsin-Madison is currently taking application for its Men's Project, a six-week program that aims to counter the alleged harmful effects of society's masculinity paradigms and pressures and empower participants to promote gender equity. Now, I haven't seen that in the Bible, but I guess these guys like it up there. I'm not saying that men and women are, that one's better than the other. I'm not saying that, but they're not equal. They're different. Okay? They're just different. Men's Project creates a space for critical self-reflection and dialogue about what it means to be a man and how masculinity impacts us and those around us, organizers state in promoting the effort. The experience focuses on the examination of social images, expectations, and messages around masculinity to empower men to better understand themselves, promote the advancement of gender equity, and raise consciousness in their communities. It's only open to men. Listen to this. This is going to make you guys puke. You're going to puke on this one. Listen to this. It can't say it's only open to men. It says, here's what it says. It's open only to men, quote, identified students, men identified students. So in other words, you can't say you're a man, but you identify as a man. If the public university operates on a transformative model of social justice, according to a news release on the university's website, which adds, by encouraging that kind of dialogue among a men-identified cohort, the goal is to create a sense of security and vulnerability through the 6 weeks program. Participants will begin the project with a weekend retreat in February and continue meeting weekly, discussing topics such as media, pop culture, vulnerability, sexuality, hookup culture, alcohol, relationships, and violence. The program is now in its second year and was most recently offered in the fall of 2016. In an email to the College Fix, the University of Wisconsin-Madison Director of News and Media Relations, Meredith McClone, said the project serves an important purpose. Recent research suggests college campuses have not effectively addressed male students' needs, she stated. Research also indicates that expectations around masculinity impact the way a man will experience college. McClone suggested typical understanding of masculinity can affect male students in a negative way. I got to repeat that one. The typical understandings of masculinity can affect a male student in a negative way. These expectations influence the decisions men make about friendships. Here we go. They're fixing to get to the point now. Spending time outside of class. Here we go. Here it comes. Careers and academic majors. And sexual and romantic relationships. Here we go. There we go. They want everybody to be queer. That's it. Here we go. Men are socialized to believe they need to act a certain way to be accepted as masculine or have what it takes. This can lead to self-destructive behaviors that impair the ability to complete their education, kind of like maybe working out on a regular basis, which doesn't affect anything as far as your education. Research indicates that young men are less likely to enroll in graduate from college, less likely to seek help from campus resources, and more likely to engage in risky behaviors such as abusing drugs and alcohol. That's crap, by the way. I didn't do that. Research also indicates that programs such as the Men's Project can counter these negative trends and support college men and their educational experience. I mean, this is all this is a giant gay lecture probably taught by a feminist or a gay man.
Yep.
I remember last year when Harrison was going to take a class at the local college where he attends as a junior now, he came home one night and he said, I've got this professor who's running around with a bow tie and he's really, really, really gay. And he's really, really funny, which, you know, a lot of gay guys are funny. And I immediately withdrew him from the class because I told my wife, I said, this is not a Christian university, it's a secular university. The Bible says a little yeast works its way through the whole through the whole loaf. And quite frankly, we don't need a 16-year-old, 15-year-old young man listening to a gay professor talk about his values and all the other junk that he believes in. Because quite frankly, we don't believe that at the house, and neither does my 17-year-old now. None of us believe this nonsense. So I don't want that trash going in. It's kind of like when I read certain articles online, there's a certain point that I stop. This morning I was reading an article, Austin, on Podesta, and they started showing artwork that he collects. Some of the most perverse, weirdo stuff that you've ever seen. I saw one photograph, and then I emailed it to my list of the folks who get my personal email from the house, and I said, warning, graphic content. And I didn't look at anything else. Because some things cannot be unseen. I'm going to repeat that. Some things cannot be unseen, and some things cannot be unheard. And that's just the way it works. That's why the Bible says, think on the good things. And it also tells you that you're not supposed to hang out with bad people, that bad people will corrupt good character. So when you have organizations like this at the University of Wisconsin who are basically trying to help these guys to determine their sexuality, what this is all about, and they're trying to tell them that their gender role that they've been given by God with a Y chromosome is not okay, it's not necessary to have, and that if they want to be a woman, they can be identified as a woman. If they want to be a man, they can be identified as a man. Whatever they want, they can have, because it's just the way it is. That's simply not true. Again, this is the Sabbatean Satan way of doing things. This is what they do. They turn everything upside down that God has made, because they're trying to destroy everything God has made. It's like Sodom and Gomorrah. The angels show up, and they want to have sex with the angels. The guys want to have, they want to sodomize the angels. They even send their daughter out to say, have my sex with my daughter instead of the angels. No, 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 we want the men who came with you. I mean, unbelievable. As it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be upon the returning of the Son of Man. Once these people have this deception put upon them through this sorcery of this energy field on this planet they use against us that we've talked about hundreds of times, they really have a hard time breaking out of the spell that they're in. And these young kids that are going there, remember, these are 18-year-old students, a lot of them going to this class. They haven't really fit in quite right in high school or whatever. They're going to the University of Wisconsin, and now they take this class, and they're saying, it's okay to be gay. It's good to be gay. It's better for you to be gay, because that way you don't have to identify with these horrible men who basically like to go out and date girls. Shame on them. This is the whole point of this, guys. I'm telling you what this is about. It's all about exploring the sexuality. I guarantee you a large portion of that course deals with this for that very, very reason. So, guys, if you have children that are going to college, this is really important. Number one, try to send them to a Christian university if possible. But a lot of those Christian schools are very expensive. I know Liberty University with Jerry Falwell is phenomenal. Southeastern University down here in Lakeland is great. Oral Roberts University has made a big comeback since my friend Mark Rutland pulled that place out of the dump. So there are a lot of places that you can send a school to send a child to school if you need to help that child to try to figure out who he or she is. But guys, listen to me for a second. You need to start training these kids in the way they should go when they're home, because it says if you'll do that, they'll not depart from it. The same thing is true. When these kids are trained in this acceptance of all this junk from their parents, they'll not depart from those values either. They'll stay with those values a lot of times for the rest of their life, unless they have a true born-again experience. It's so important that we as Christians, we as Americans, realize that there's a Y chromosome and there's an X chromosome. It's double X or XY. It's not like we had a choice in how God put it together. It's just the way it works. And that's the way it's supposed to be. Now, what we've done, we've skewed the lines between these chromosomes because of the hormones we put into the food supply and what they've done to developing fetuses. We've covered that many times. And we feminized a whole generation of young boys now who we call metrosexual or metro males. I remember years ago, Austin was in college, and I remember there was a kid there at the school who was in one of the dorm rooms, and Austin knew him. He was talking to me one day, and I was talking to Austin, and I told Austin, I said, Austin, the kid's gay. And Austin goes, oh, no, no, he's not gay. He's not gay. And he's just metro. And I said, no, he's queer. And Austin, I remember, you remember this conversation? No, no,
oh,
Dad.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No, no, he's not. And as soon as he graduated, he came out of the closet, he was queer. Now guys, listen to me. I don't care if he's queer. I really don't, because this is something he's got to choose, okay? But what I don't want to have happen is that people who are either or not sure what they want to do get influenced by society to go a certain way against God's will. If they want to do all of that, that's their own problem. They're going to have to deal with that between themselves and God Almighty. I just don't want to know about it. I don't want to see it. I don't want to be involved in it. I don't care. They don't show up on my radar screen. I feel bad for the ones that have been affected because of bisphenol A and estrogen when their mothers were pregnant with them, and that's happened to them. I feel horrible for them, and that's why I've got such a tolerant attitude towards it. But when they take young children into these university systems and they try to force them into that mindset, that really pisses me off, excuse my language. It really makes me angry, because there's absolutely no reason to take a child who may be a little confused about who he or she is because of the hormones in the food supply and try to force them into a mold that's going to cause problems for them the rest of their lives. And that's how I feel about that, Austin. What do you think?
No, it was an incredibly succinct opening. I'm glad you brought that up, because it's really becoming a significant issue. I mean, almost all these universities now, not all of them, but a large portion of them, are pretty much turning into just globalism and homosexual indoctrination academies. And I mean that very succinctly. All they're teaching now is pretty much globalism is good, big government is good, digital currency, trading, all this other stuff tying into globalism is good, and you need to do whatever you feel as far as your sexual orientation. If you want to be a he, she, it, whatever 50 different names and pronouns they have now to describe all that, that's what you need to do. And you're exactly right about that class, Dad. I can guarantee you, if you pull up the core curriculum on it, a humongous portion of that class deals in sexuality and sexual behavior and doing whatever you feel is appropriate for how you feel towards the same gender or another gender, because what they want is they want everybody to have this very confused mindset. And the thing is, as you were just saying, a lot of these kids now have this issue from maybe hormones, BPA, things that have happened when they're younger, but that doesn't mean they have to stay like that. That doesn't mean they don't have to fight it, but that doesn't mean they have to accept it and go down that route. But what they have now is they have this generation that has been exposed to a lot of this, that probably are a little bit more feminine than they ever have been before in history, and now you're taking those kids and you're putting them into these indoctrination academies that are simply telling them it's okay to engage in that lifestyle behavior. It's fun. It's good. Do whatever you feel is good for you, and that's okay. That's the way it needs to be, which is completely and totally false, and we know that now. And what they're doing is they're creating this entire generation that is literally, like Dad said, if they don't get their way, if they're not told what they want to hear, if they don't get the grade they want, if they don't get the president that they want, they pitch a fit, demand Play-Doh and pizza, and want to go sit in their safe space and have no idea how to cope with any type of reality. And then on top of that, you're adding in this entire homosexual agenda to confuse them even further. So now not only do they get unbelievably upset when they don't get their way, they're unbelievably confused about what they're attracted to. So we have this entire generation that literally has no understanding of reality or any type of moral or ethics whatsoever. And it's really quite sad, but that we've seen this now. And it really is sad. This is interesting now. I brought this up earlier because I wanted to really touch base on it. We've talked about this multiple times with the new PlayStations, the TVs, the dishwashers, the refrigerators. A lot of people have laughed at me before when Dad and I have talked about stuff, and we say your dishwasher or your washing machine listens to you, or your refrigerator listens to you. People laugh. I probably go, I don't do that. That's ridiculous. No, it's smart technology. They've been doing it for years now. Now, Sarah Campman's Sci editor came out now with a full article explicitly going into stating high-tech washing machines and fridges will soon be used by detectives gathering evidence from crime scenes. Detectives are currently being trained to look for gadgets and white goods, which is, you know, appliances, which could provide a digital footprint of victims or criminals. Mark Stokes, the head of the Digital Cyber Communications Forensic Unit, stated, "Wireless cameras within a device such as a refrigerator will record the movement of owners and suspects. doorbells that connect directly to apps on a user's phone can show who has rung the doorbell and the owner of others that may remotely chime in if they choose and give controlled access to the premises while away from the property. All these leave a log and a trace of activity. The crime scene of tomorrow is going to be the Internet of Things. The new Samsung Family Hub fridge, what I've talked about before, has cameras that carry a live feed of its contents so shoppers can tell what they need when they're out shopping. The dates and times that people log on to the fridge are included as well, and it's all stored in the smart technology that Samsung owns with that. You guys remember I talked about the Echo, the Amazon Echo that massively got a bunch of flack last year, the little music box that's basically Bluetooth that listens to your conversation so you can say, play such and such song off Pandora, play such and such song off iTunes, and it'll immediately pull the song and play it up. Well, Amazon now is currently fighting against the U.S. attorneys to hand over recordings from its Echo Home entertainment systems that belong to James Andrew Bates, which is investigating the murder of Victor Collins back in 2015. All this stuff is tying in, guys, to a virtual system that literally everything you do, see, watch, touch, taste, smell, everything is going to be recorded, just like in the movie Minority Report. That movie is incredibly weird, but if you watch it, it will show you what the overall globalist plan is to do. And one of those plans, what they have been doing now, is indoctrinating this younger generation that Dad and I just spoke about into accepting all of this smart technology, including the digital pay now, the cardless society, the cashless society. Everything is rolling into this system, and a lot of people don't realize it's happening. That's why I keep bringing it up so often, because this is really, really, really starting to get close to a full-blown digital society where it will be a totalitarian nightmare, because they will know everything you do and will be able to control almost every facet of your life if we don't start putting the brakes on this and not allowing it to completely control our lives. That's why I tell people all the time, use cash. Now, I don't need you to have a $2,000 or $3,000 in your wallet all the time, but use cash as much as you can. Have extra cash with you or at your house. Try and do things without always being with the cards or with online. Do things outside of the system and constantly try and have alternatives, plan A, B, and C if you're doing something, if you're going somewhere. That way you always have a backup plan. And also, too, if we continue to use cash, it will always show a significant demand. So it will be much, much harder for the globalists to phase the currency out if we still have a massive demand for it. But if we start rolling it into this digital society and the MasterCard system that's coming out this year already, that's already rolling with the facial recognition payment system, and all this starts to happen, the cash will disappear. I promise you that. Look what they've done in India, what they're doing over in Australia, what they've done in all these other countries now. They have to get everything together in a full-blown global digital society. So you have to do the best you can to try and stay out of that system and not support it right now.
Well, it was a beta test. You know, Australia and India were both beta tests because they're both Rothschild-controlled banks. They wanted to see how badly that things would get messed up when they did this. So they started banning the larger bills. And they see now that they're having a hard time, people having a hard time buying food in India. People are starving in India. I mean, the poor in India are unbelievably poor anyhow because they're still on the caste system. So these poor people don't have credit cards. And so they don't care about India because so many people are just the wretched poor, they call them. And so they're so poor, they're not going to run around with credit cards or ATM cards. They don't have that. They're begging for food and people have to throw money and change at them all the time. Now there's no more money or change to throw because it's all been absorbed into the banking system. They're doing this entire shift in India and taking these large denominated currencies, bills, out of Australia. Why? Because the Rothschild banking cartel runs the world. Goldman Sachs runs the world, and Goldman Sachs is one of the primary owners of the Rothschild banking cartel. Now, you got to remember something, guys. I love Israel. I remember Austin and I, years ago, we took a vacation on a cruise ship, and we stopped in Haifa, and we took a taxi and or whatever we had. I forgot what we did. I think we had a guide picked us up at the cruise ship, and they took us all over Israel. We went to the Dead Sea. We went to the Sea of Galilee. We went all over the place. I mean, we saw so much stuff. We saw Peter's home on the ocean there, on the Sea of Galilee. We walked the Via Dolorosa. I absolutely love Israel. Now, yesterday I said some stuff about AIPAC, the American Israeli Political Action Committee. Got a little bit of blowback from that, so I want to cover a little bit more detail on this. you have to understand something, and I'm going to say this, and please stay with me on this. The current government in Israel, they are not Christians. This is so important that people get this. I mean, everybody thinks that they're Christians. Well, they're not Christians. They're basically, they're using the Babylonian Talmud Jews, what they are. And what they are is they don't follow the Old Testament like we think they would do in Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. They don't follow the Torah. They may read that occasionally, but their primary book is the Talmud. And the Talmud is basically opposed to Christianity. It was written in the 6th century after Jesus' ascension. Now, what's interesting about this is that I love Israel. Now, I've told you guys that, and I pray for Israel. I do, and I want Israel to prosper and be blessed. But the United States' involvement in Israel through the American-Israeli Political Action Committee is nothing short of criminal. The Rothschild banking cartel are the ones who started Israel with the Balfour Declaration back at the end of World War I. I did an entire show one time on this topic on Hagman and Hagman. Now, what you need to realize is this. Israel is basically a fiefdom of the Rothschild Empire. It's a socialized country that's very wealthy, that has hundreds of nuclear bombs, that we support with the biggest bulk of our contributions in giving to other countries is Israel. And it's loaded with millionaires and billionaires. Now, what's interesting about this is that these people are not Christians. You've got to get that through your head. In fact, if you go over there and you proselytize Christianity to the Jews that are there, they will put you in jail, if not prison. It's very important that you understand this is not what we think it is in Israel. We were warned not to proselytize when we were there. The Khrushchev guy says, don't be going out and talking about Jesus or talking about the Bible. You get in trouble for doing that. They tell missionaries when they go over, be very careful not to do that. Remember, Tel Aviv is the number one homosexual gay destination city on the planet. That's what you have to get. The entire group of people that are there who started that government there are the same ones who basically are ruling our government and pushing this far left communist gay agenda in the United States. Now, you think, well, that's not true. That is true, guys. Now, I love Israel, and I pray for Israel, and I pray that Jerusalem be blessed, and I pray for the peace of Jerusalem. I got all of that. But you've got to understand who and what are running Jerusalem. Now, if they were still practicing from the Torah, if they were still doing all the things the Torah said to do, and they were trying to, you know, do the things that were right in God's eyes, hey, I'm with you guys, but they don't do that over there. In fact, I want to read you this real quick. This is so important. This is an article that came out of the Daily Sheeple, and it says it's called Obama Abandoned Israel, and it says some of the things you're not being told. In 2011, linguist and foreign policy critic Noam Chomsky was asked whether he thought Obama was as bad as George Bush, to which Chomsky responded, he's worse. Asked why, Chomsky cited Obama's use of the veto, UN veto at the Security Council level, which killed a resolution condemning settlement expansions that Israel was building in 2011. After that, Obama was famously known for placing very few limits on Israel, with the exception of blocking an arms transfer during Operation Protective Edge, for example. There was also the supposed fallout between Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, by the way, I've had dinner with him, and Obama over the Iranian nuclear agreement last year. But that agreement had nothing to do with curbing Israel's power in the region. Anyone paying attention to the Iranian nuclear issue knows that the agreement was largely symbolic and meaningless, as sanctions targeting Iran have continued quite dramatically. Just recently, the Obama administration approved the largest military package to Israel to date. We've covered this. Per this agreement, the U.S. will provide Israel $38 billion worth of military aid if Israel, in turn, promises to use that money to purchase equipment from American suppliers. If there was ever any need to prove that Washington is in the bed with the military-industrial machine, this deal alone kills any debate on that issue. Now, think about that. We're giving them $38 billion. Now, the United States is running a giant, giant deficit, right now, $1 trillion a year. Doesn't make any difference. We're giving billions and billions of dollars away to a country that is extremely wealthy with millionaires and billionaires and has over 200 nuclear weapons already. Let me read you some more quotes. Our military exercises are more advanced than ever. Our assistance for the Iron Dome has saved countless Israeli lives. We have consistently supported Israel's right to defend itself by itself, including during actions Gaza that sparked great controversy. Time and time again, we've demonstrated that we have Israel's back. We are strongly opposed boycotts, investment campaigns, and sanctions targeting Israel. Okay, the support for Israel runs deeper than most Americans. This is John Kerry's quotes, by the way. In the midst of our own financial crisis and budget deficits, we repeatedly increased funding and support to Israel. In fact, more than half of our entire global foreign military financing goes to Israel. I'm going to repeat this. This is John Kerry. Half of the entire global foreign military financing goes to Israel. Half. Last Friday, the Obama administration abstained from a UN Security Council resolution to condemn Israel's settlement expansions, and the resolution contains no enforcement provisions. Now, what's interesting is Ron Paul also has some comments about all of this, and I want to read you this. Ron Paul says, why are we sending $38 billion to the rich and powerful Israel? Last week's announcement of record-breaking U.S. aid package for Israel underscores how dangerously foolish and out of touch is our interventionist foreign policy. Over the next 10 years, we're giving Israel $38 billion. All U.S. foreign aid is immoral and counterproductive. I agree with Ron Paul 100%. I am not picking on Israel. I love Israel. I'm telling you, I got it right now. And then Paul goes, as I've often said, it is money taken from poor people in the U.S. and sent to rich people overseas. That is because U.S. assistance money goes to foreign governments to hand out as they see fit. Often that assistance is stolen outright or it goes to the politically connected in the recipient country. Just as bad is the fact that much of what we call foreign aid is actually welfare for wealthy here at home. The aid package to Israel is a very good example. According to the agreement, $38 billion will go to U.S. weapons manufacturers. While even U.S. government aid to desperately poor countries should be opposed on moral and practical grounds, it is even harder to understand U.S. aid to rich countries. As a nominal per capita gross domestic product of over $35,000 per person, Israel is richer than Japan, Italy, and South Korea. Not long ago, Business Insider published a report by the Institute for the Study of War showing that Israel is the most powerful military force in the Middle East, and we know they have hundreds of nuclear weapons. Guys, so here's what I'm saying is this. We have to get our own fiscal house in order before we give away huge amounts of money. Israel has hundreds of nuclear weapons. They can turn the entire Middle East into a parking lot anytime they see fit. A glass parking lot, no less. And so what we have to understand is this. Why are we continuing to pour money into Israel or any country for that matter? I'm not just saying Israel today. I'm saying any country at all until we get our collective houses in order. Now, if we want to have a fund for Haiti relief, okay, that doesn't go through the Clinton Foundation, and we all want to throw in $5 or $10 or $100 or whatever you feel you want to do with your heart, and it goes directly into Haiti to help the people there, you can do it through a church, I have no problems with that at all. But putting a gun to my head and Austin's head and all of us who pay income tax and say, we're going to do this with your income tax that we take from you because we want to give this money away. You have no choice or say in this. We will basically put you in jail if you don't pay your taxes and take your stuff and then do what we want with your money. It's basically nothing short of tyranny. So I'm really hoping that Donald Trump stops all of this foreign aid. It's interventionist. And it's not necessary. And we need to realize something, guys. The Mossad was involved in 9/11. The reports clearly indicate that and all of the stuff that I've read over the last 11, 12, 13, 14 years. And you keep seeing it happen over and over and over again. Now, I'm not saying the government was involved in that from Israel. I didn't say that. I said the Mossad was. Just like our CIA was involved in the assassination of John F. Kennedy. We know that, too. We have to be careful with these internal intelligence organizations and what they do when they go off the chain and they decide to do what they want to do, regardless of what they've been told to do or whatever their mandate is. So we've got a situation here that the United States needs to put its own fiscal house in order. We need to stop giving money away. We need to close our borders to these terrorists who want to kill us, and we need to turn around and try to help the people of the United States and rebuild our own infrastructure. And I believe that message has been resoundingly positive for everybody who's voted for Donald Trump because that's exactly what he says. So, guys, listen to me for a second. Please, I'm not picking on any individual country at all. I'm just saying, look at the facts, look where the money's going, and realize this. It's coming a reckoning right now with this giant Ponzi scheme that this sorcery bank has done to us, the Federal Reserve, with their Babylonian money magic. And guys, when it hits, it's going to hit hard. And George Soros has already said in some of his quotes now that if a big financial crisis hits, which he's done to multiple countries in multiple areas of the world, Soros personally has overseen that, because remember, he's an arm of the Rothschild Bank, that he can take Donald Trump down and Donald Trump won't be able to do what he wants to do. So if that's a threat, I don't know. But I like what Russia has done, Austin, and they have banned George Soros from their country. So guys, listen to me. We got to continue to pray for Trump because we've got some very strange times coming up ahead. And if he doesn't capitulate to the wants and the demands of the central banks, he sure better go ahead and nationalize those things as quickly as he possibly can, or they're going to wreck the country by contracting the M1 money supply like they did in 1929, and also starting them to do massive increases in interest rates, which is going to make our national debt go through the roof, and it's going to be a giant, giant mess. What do you think, Austin?
Well, yeah, that's what we talked about yesterday in detail as far as with the Federal Reserve Bank and the control and hold they have over this country and almost every other country in the world. Remember, guys, that's why I told you numerous times, before we invaded Iraq, they did not have a Federal Reserve-controlled bank in that country. Almost none of the Middle Eastern countries did over in that country before we invaded them over weapons of mass destruction. Now we see the exact same nonsense being perpetrated on Russia now over and over and over again until, like we said, the people are going to believe it's true. Just like Iran does not have a Federal Reserve Bank in that country yet. Now, I don't agree with a lot of stuff Iran does at all, nor do I support them, but just be careful when the next thing you start hearing is about we need to go invade Iran. They've done this or they've done that. We need to go invade Iran, invade, invade, invade. We need another war. It's exactly what they do every time. And as Dad just said, if this starts going as far as Trump really tries to do this and he's long-winded with the Federal Reserve and he doesn't have all of his ducks lined up, that's the first thing they're going to do is they're going to completely collapse the economy. And remember, guys, it doesn't matter how much of a, you know, Republican or a libertarian or how much of a, you know, free country he wants to promote. If it starts going totally, just completely chaotic in this country, law and order is going to have to be established. And at that point, you already see all the things that Obama has signed over the last couple of years. It completely gives the government full-blown control over the citizens. I hope and pray that doesn't happen. I really don't think it will. But you always have to keep a lot of these things in mind. That's why I've told everybody for the last couple of years, especially now in the last 6 months, that you need to be ready for anything. I mean, it's always good. I mean, one of my bags the other day, I just ordered a couple more cat tourniquets for it and quick clot bandages. Having stuff on hand, having a couple first aid kits, knowing how to use a tourniquet properly, having random things like that can absolutely save your life in a serious catastrophe, whether it be some type of act of war, whether it be an invasion, whether it just be something as simple as, you know, a natural disaster. But being ready, having food, having first aid, having adequate water filtration, having ammo and guns, having basic staples like that so you don't have to worry. If something does happen, you can rely on God and say, hey, I've been prepared the best I can, the best I know how to be. I'm ready for anything that comes with God behind me. Instead of sitting around saying, well, I don't know what I'm going to do, or waiting till it happens, and then absolutely having no idea what you're going to do because you got 2 days worth of food in your cupboard and you got 2 or 3 cans of beans and rice stored up somewhere else, and that's the extent of your food supply for the 6 people in your family. That's not a good position to be in. When the going is good right now, build up, do what you have. Like I've always said before so many times, the ants store up food in the summer because they know what's happening in the winter. And winter doesn't change for them. They always are getting ready for the winter. During the summer, they get ready like the winter's coming. During the winter, they're ready because they've been preparing all summer. Everybody has to start getting that mindset together. But I think a lot more people are waking up. As Dad and I talk to people all the time, all over the country, on the phone, via email, in person, and more people are realizing, as we saw with the turnout for Trump, more and more people are realizing that this isn't working anymore and something has to change. And granted, the things that are going to change, it's going to bite for a little bit. I guarantee you that. It's going to hurt in some areas for a lot of people. But the only way to get this rolling correctly again is to do that. And like Dad just said, giving $38, $40 billion to Israel for more foreign aid to buy stuff from U.S. contractors. Are you kidding me? We're running a multi-trillion-dollar deficit every year, and we're giving away billions of dollars to another multi-trillion dollar company at our debt expense so they can buy more stuff from our military contract? Does anybody else realize how bizarre that sounds to me, that it's actually happening, and we know it's happening, and they're blatantly open about it happening, and apparently nobody in Washington thinks that's abnormal behavior anymore because it's been going on for so long? Makes completely and totally no sense to me. But if for good news for a lot of people in America as far as jobs, we've seen already now, since Trump has been elected, or president-elect, I should say, jobs are coming back. Ford now announced today that it completely canceled its $1.6 billion factory in Mexico and will turn around and reinvest $700 million at its Michigan factory. The second largest U.S. automaker said it would build a new electric hybrid vehicle at the Michigan plant. Ford Chief Mark Fields on Tuesday said the decision to cancel the new plant in Mexico was in part related to the need to fully utilize capacity at existing facilities. Yeah, cough, cough. We all know what really is going on with that. He doesn't want to get hit with all these re-import taxes from bringing all this stuff back in from Mexico that Trump has already said. And also, too, Trump's already told multiple, you know, multiple different news conferences that the pro-growth tax and regulatory policies that Trump is advocating are going to go into effect. So Ford now has decided they're not going to build this factory in Mexico, which I'm really, really excited about, because the last thing we need to be doing is taking American facilities, American jobs, American businesses, and outsourcing them to another country to turn around and send them back in. I told you guys a couple of weeks ago when they're like around 30% of the salmon and seafood from Alaska and Washington State is sent from Washington State to China to be deboned and processed, to be sent back to the United States on ice for us to eat it and consume it and transport it all over the country from here. That, again, is another one of those boggles my mind. I can't even understand how we've allowed that to happen. These are the exact things that Trump has been talking about now. And before he's even president, he's already getting massive multi-billion dollar companies like Ford to cancel Mexico plants and keep the stuff here in the United States. So that at least is pretty exciting to me, Dad, from that aspect.
I completely agree with you, Austin. Another article here from the Religion of Peace in New Year's Day celebrations around the world. Bedlam. Video shows the Muslims, migrants in Sweden aiming fireworks at people. A video is going viral on YouTube, shows the absolute bedlam that unfolded in the Swedish city of Malmo, M-A-L-M-O, on New Year's Eve, with immigrants launching fireworks in the direction of crowds of people as police do nothing. This is the perfect illustration of the cultural enrichment that has invaded Sweden, that has become besieged by arson attacks on a routine basis, with cars regularly being torched by Muslim migrants. The terror group ISIS even claimed one of the attacks. The scenes are disturbingly reminiscent of what happened in Cologne last year before the mass molestation of German women. The only difference here is that there appear to be no native Swedes in attendance, with virtually everyone in the city appearing to be Middle Eastern or North African origin. I'm telling you guys, I was there a few years ago, and it is gone. Everything is gone. They are no longer Swedes in Sweden. When I was there with Austin years and years ago, they were literally all blonde hair, blue eyes, back in the 90s, and that is over with in Stockholm. And I tell you what, guys, it's going to be over with everywhere. Oh, by the way, the Religion of Peace also apparently have torched 650 cars on New Year's Eve in Paris. I mean, I don't even know what to say about this stuff. You read this crazy stuff and you're thinking, this is nuts. All this stuff's happening on and on and on and on. Cars are getting burned. All this stuff is happening on a regular basis. And the thing about it is that, you know, is this okay? Well, no, it's not okay to any of us, but apparently it's okay to Angela Merkel, who is deciding that it's all right that you're being a racist if you tell these guys that you don't like them doing this to you. I mean, I don't even know what to say about any of this stuff. It's just crazy. Now, the 650 car thing, I read that. I'm trying to find the limits to it, but go ahead, let me verify that by tomorrow. But I know they've had a lot of rioting and stuff in Paris on an ongoing basis. Here's another story. An Oregon couple have been told they have no water rights. They have a 2-acre pond on their property they bought 10 years ago that's been there for over 25 years, and they're saying now that these people have to destroy the pond and let the water run away because they didn't have the water rights. This is by Vedita. because the rain belongs to the overbearing government, because corporate greed claims water is not a human right, and because Americans are not entitled to do what they please on their private property. Remember the Oregon Rain Man, or Gary Harrington, who was sent to 30 days in jail in Jackson County and slapped with a $1,500 fine for collecting rainwater on his 170-acre property? He was ordered to breach his dams and drain his ponds that held more than 13 million gallons of water, enough to fill 20 Olympic-sized swimming pools. Now an Oregon couple faces similar fate as Gary Harrington, because the rain belongs to the overbearing government again, because corporate greed claims that water is not a human right, and because Americans are not entitled to do what they please on their private property. The Jackson County Water Master's Office told John and Sabrina Carey to destroy their two-acre pond, built 40 years ago, long before they ever bought the 10-acre property off of Butte Falls Highway 2.5 years ago, as they don't have any water rights. You know, Austin, I see all of this stuff, and I remember last summer we looked at some property out in Montana, and they kept telling us it has water rights. It has water rights. It has water rights. And some of the other people would say on their listings, no water rights, no water rights, which means the government tells you what you can and can't do on a pond that's been there for 40 years after you've only owned the property for a couple of years. Maybe you bought the house because you wanted a two-acre pond on your property, and now you're going to have to destroy it. It was going to massively decrease the value of the land, but they don't care. What do you think about that, Oz?
I find it very interesting, because that is one of the, you know, to me, that's a right to every living being, animals, human beings, anything, is water. Because as we all understand, water is essentially life. Without water, any living being dies within a few days to a few weeks. I mean, most of them, except for a camel or something like that, of course. But, you know, human beings can only go on about 3 to 4 day water deprivation before you die. So it's one of those aspects to me where it's like, that's a right that nobody can take away from you. That's the right of life. You have to have water to live. But we see, as I just talked about yesterday, Dad, that, you know, the U.S. government owns almost 90% of Nevada. The federal government owns 90% of Nevada. Other states are 60, 70%. They own almost 30% of the entire country. It's federal land that they control. Now, the issue I have with that is the same thing you were just saying. When you start owning property, you buy something, it has water run through it, you have water. Now, if you're starting to contaminate the water and it's causing death or damage to other human beings, I completely understand that. When you start seeing these companies do that, but what's so ironic about it is you see these fertilizer companies like Monsanto back in the day when they were making some of the pesticides and herbicides and completely contaminating water sources, and they pay like a $2,000 fine, never clean it up, and that was the extent of it. Yet they have somebody that owns their own property and says they have absolutely no right to dam up a small portion or to control any of the water or utilize the water, like the rain ones that we talked about. The guy basically had water buckets, 55-gallon drums outside of his house that he was collecting rainwater with, and they said, you can't do that. You can't collect rainwater. The rainwater is ours. We own rainwater. You can't collect it. It's ours. You have to pour it out or we're going to throw you in jail. That concept to me is literally the epitome of a tyrannical government. For them to come in and say, we own the rain. You can't utilize it. You can't store it. You can't put it in a bucket. Or now they've changed it. Some of it will allow you to keep up to 50 gallons of rainwater. We'll give you permission to store a certain amount of water outside from the rain. We'll let you do that. I have a real issue with authority when they start telling me what I can and can't do with water, which is essential to life and almost every single living being, Dad. I have a real issue with that.
I agree with you, buddy. Oh, by the way, I was wrong. I apologize. The Muslims did not set 650 cars on fire in France on New Year's Eve. It was 800. I just pulled up the article.
Oh, very nice.
And so it was 150 more than I had thought. And it said, this is from Pamela Geller. It says, it's how they celebrate New Year's Eve. It's what they do, Obama say. Respect it. Over 800 cars set ablaze in France on New Year's Eve. This is from Strasbourg. This is from the Daily Sabah. A total of 804 vehicles, now it's up to 804, were set aflame in all of France on New Year's Eve, a 14.5% decrease from the previous year. Oh, my gosh. Interior Minister Bernard Cavazine said on Twitter on Friday, the 2004-2015 celebration saw 940 cars burned. Burning automobiles as a way to ring in the new year has grown into a trend in recent years, with mostly young men using it as a form of protest. The ministry said 622 people were taken into custody by French authorities over New Year's, twice as many as the year before. Maybe that's why they didn't burn as many. That's exactly right. If they took the rest of that, maybe they're not going to burn as many. The New Year's Eve celebration took place amid heavy police presence 7 weeks after the November 13 terrorist attacks on Paris. Guys, I don't even know what to say about this. 800 cars ablaze in France on New Year's Eve. I mean, wow. I mean, who does stuff like that? I mean, where do these people, where do they think that any part of that's okay? I mean, where do they think any part? Ah, there's a car. Let's burn it. Well, now I don't want you to burn it. It's my car. It doesn't matter. I want to burn that car. It's my form of protest. I'm burning your car. But I don't have comprehensive collision on that. You burn that car, I don't get any money for it. I don't have any insurance on it. I just get stuck with it, having to haul it off and got to finish, you know, basically buying another car. We don't care. We're burning the car. Go away. We're going to burn your vehicle. Guys, I don't know if these guys got dropped on their head when they were babies, if their mom had a biotin deficiency, if they were inbred with their sister. I don't know what their deal is, but you can't act like this in a civilized society. Oh, that's right. All of the Muslim countries, except the ones that have oil, aren't really civilized societies, are they? They still like lopping heads off, even in Saudi Arabia once a year. Unbelievable to me, Austin. Absolutely crazy that this is happening on an ongoing basis from the religion of peace. What do you think?
Religion of peace, at it again. Now, you think about it, average vehicle, just average vehicle, between $20,000 to $25,000, 800 plus set ablaze. That's over $20 million in just vehicle damage due to arson. And what's interesting about that, I mean, arson is very big issue, because I mean, if people were inside these cars, if they were beside the vehicles, I mean, you're talking about a class one felony. You can get life in prison for doing nonsense like that. I don't know why, again, like you said, people think that that's acceptable behavior over there. But I know in Florida, if you see somebody committing a violent felony like arson with intent to do bodily harm, you have the right to shoot them on the spot. You do not even have to ask them to stop doing that criminal act. So that's something, just a side note, in the state of Florida. But, of course, Angela Merkel stated on New Year's that the best way to fight this behavior is with compassion. She said the best thing to do is basically offer our compassion and open arms and continue to bring in the terrorists and give them hugs, I'm paraphrasing this, with compassion and show them that they're wanted. And the more that we do that, the more it'll show them that they don't need to be radical Islamic terrorists and don't need to do what their Quran says under Sharia law and basically lop heads off and set people on fire. It's funny here, it said over the past 2 years, Germany has experienced some of the worst atrocities in history in the last 20 years since 1980, with Islamic suicide bombings, shootings, axe attacks, and truck rampage. The country's also experienced the largest wave of mass sexual attacks, social unrest, crime, and pressure on public services since 1980. And again, like you said, Dad, the religion of peace, at it again, bringing freedom to everybody it touches. Fantastic individuals to hang out with, in my opinion.
You know, it's so funny. We were in Cologne here last year, and we were also in Frankfurt, and we were in a bunch of different cities in Germany. We were driving around on vacation last summer, and I remember these big cities in Germany, even the cities were spotless. They were clean. I mean, clean. I mean, scrubbing sidewalks. And it's not like that anymore because of all of these people from other countries. They call them Ausländers, other lands. They basically have filth and dirt and garbage piled up on the streets, just like every other city in Europe now. I mean, Italy's the worst. You go to Italy in the big cities, it's like a cesspool, dirt, garbage everywhere. It's awful. It's just awful in Italy as far as a organized state. And it's sad because now it's the same things in these big cities in Germany. Now, if you get to the smaller communities where they really don't have this massive population influx because they don't have the social welfare programs available for these people in those smaller towns, they don't have that. It's still super clean over there. So, guys, I'm going to say this to you again. I said it to you multiple times, and I don't really know how to make it any more clear than this. If you ever want to see what was once Germany before it completely changes into a Muslim caliphate, I highly suggest that you go over there if possible in the next few years, because it won't be what you think it's going to be if you don't. By the way, 1,565 refugees who came into the United States have been diagnosed with active TB. This is three times more than was actively basically diagnosed or told we had. Between 2012 and 2015, 1,565 refugees were diagnosed with active tuberculosis in the United States, according to annual reports by the CDC. Now remember, guys, this is what they're telling us. I think it's probably 10 times as high. It's probably over 10,000. Because usually it's very small, the amount that gets reported to the actual numbers. The CDC's data, which has been public but obscured until now, shows that the number of refugees diagnosed with active TB in recent years is more than three times greater than previously reported by any media outlet. The number of refugees diagnosed with TB in the United States has increased every year since 2012, the first year the CDC began publishing data on foreign-born cases of disease by category. You know, this is a big problem with tuberculosis that's coming into the United States, because a lot of people in the United States are going to start coming down with these different types of diseases that were eradicated here years ago through proper hygiene and proper diet, supplementation, etc. We've got a problem with tuberculosis coming back and polio coming back, and this is one of the things that a lot of the doctors talk about with the immunizations. Acute flaccid paralysis, they're calling it now. It used to be called polio. And what's crazy about all of this stuff is it's all based back on your immune system. Just because you get exposed to these things doesn't mean you're going to come down with these things if your immune system is strong. So please, especially during the winter months now, take D3 K2. Our capsule has 10,000 IUs. During the winter months, I'd suggest taking one of those capsules a day. After the sun starts coming back out in the northern areas, you start taking like one of those capsules three times a week. That's enough. But right now, I'd really load up on the D3. And once a year, if you're taking it every day, get your vitamin D as a dog 3 levels tested by your doctors, a blood test. It'll run you around $100. And make sure you don't go over around 70 or 80 on the test as far as the total amounts you have in your system. That's really, really important. Also, astragalus is a phenomenal product for the immune system. Just the other day, I know Austin didn't feel good on Friday. Started hammering the astragalus and the immune support protocol over the weekend. By Monday, he's back on the show yesterday sounding great. He sounded awful on Friday. These colds don't have to be some horrible debilitating problem, and the flu don't have to be a horrible debilitating problem if your immune system is strong. Plus, you need to be taking vitamin C every day. We've also talked about how that ties directly into heart disease by the research that was done by Linus Pauling in plaquing in the arteries. If your arteries are starting to break down, you start having these plaques build up inside of the arteries to try to patch your artery walls. That's very important. You understand that vitamin C, according to Linus Pauling, 2-time Nobel Prize winner, says that that'll help to reduce that. I take vitamin C every day. And to me, vitamin C is the youth vitamin. It is the one that will keep the collagen in your body intact, keep your skin from sagging, your skin from wrinkling as much, and much give you a much better youthful appearance. And yes, it's old school stuff. It's back from the 1920s, 1930s, 1940s. But guys, remember what happened and why they called the British sailors limeys. It's because they ate a lot of limes because they were coming down with scurvy on the ships. They were gone for so long, and the limes could be stored for an extended period of time when they were picked green, and the sailors would either drink the lime juice or eat the lime once a day and prevent scurvy from the vitamin C. Now, the amount of vitamin C they tell you to use is like 60 milligrams a day. Well, that's designed to prevent scurvy. So if you want to prevent scurvy, take your 60 milligrams of vitamin C a day. If you want to stay really healthy with a really good, strong immune system, take 3 to 4,000 milligrams of vitamin C every day. That's what I do every morning. I mix it with my purple stick and drink it first thing in the morning on an empty stomach. I get the powdered vitamin C directly from, of course, healthmasters.com. So the D3, the astragalus, and make sure the D3 contains K2. That's important. And also the vitamin C and the potassium iodine. The potassium iodine is absolutely critical, very inexpensive product. I take that every single day, 12.5 milligrams, 13.5 milligrams. Is it 12.5 or 13.5, Austin? I don't remember.
I'm pretty sure it's 12.5 is the one that we carry.
That's a phenomenal dosing on that. It also, it's part of that is nascent iodine, so it's a phenomenal product. Very, very inexpensive. The same type of quality products are being sold on GCN by some of the other talk show hosts for $40, $50, $60, $80 a bottle. I mean, ours is like $20, so it's a much better value as far as I'm concerned, and it's very highly concentrated, and it's a phenomenal product. It really, really is. So, guys, thank you for supporting Health Masters. Thanks for being here for us. Thanks for listening to the show. Thanks for putting up with our jokes sometimes that aren't so funny. Maybe you like the jokes that are funny. And thank you for just being here and praying for us. We appreciate that so much. And thank you for listening to us and sending us so many emails. We really love you guys. And we've been on the air now for a couple of years. It's been a blast. I mean, having a great time. The show's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So I want to thank you for that. I want to thank you because without you guys supporting Health Masters and supporting the show, we could never be on the air, and then we'd have to do like a lot of the other talk show hosts have started doing, and that's turning their shows into infomercials, and I refuse to do that. My teachers and my pastors have always taught me, God's will done God's way never lacks God's support. And so that's why I want you guys to realize that we appreciate the fact that God is in the middle of this with us. I always try to bring honor and glory to God with all the shows that we do. And we always try to talk about Yeshua and Yahweh every single time. And guys, as far as I know, we're one of the only talk show hosts, except for Hagman and Hagman, that do that. So guys, thank you again for all that you do, and we appreciate you. Austin, what's your next story?
Oh, also, too, I wanted to touch base on it real quick. You're saying the vitamin C. Also, guys, a really good aspect of vitamin C is taking it pre-workout. Doesn't have to be a lot. Usually around 700 to 1,500 milligrams. I usually take between one to two capsules before workout. Because remember, vitamin C is an incredibly good antioxidant, especially the buffered vitamin C that we have. And it deals with metabolic stress very well. And understand, training and cardio is metabolic stress. Anytime you're putting your body under a stress load, vitamin C is one of the best antioxidants to help out with that stress, which in turn is going to help keep the immune system strong when you're exercising a lot. It's also going to help you recover faster, and it's also going to help your body maintain and build, if that's what your goal is, more efficient muscle tissue when you have the ability to reduce oxidative stress like that. So I just want to kind of bring that up because Dad said it's great for the immune system, which it is. It's incredibly good for the immune system, but a lot of people don't realize the health benefits it has to people that exercise regularly. That's one of the reasons why in our HGH Stimulate, we have the vitamin C in that product, because it's a really good pre-workout that adds in a lot of the proper nutrients that you need to help out with natural growth hormone production and also increase in the pump. That's why I love taking that every day. So does Dad. Actually, right now, it's getting voted on, which is going to win tomorrow. And right now, HGH Stimulate is just taking away the lead from all the other products, which it does normally when we allow it to be, you know, basically voted on. It usually wins immediately just because it's such a popular product.
And also remember, the HGH Stimulate is a very unique product because it contains quercetin, which is one of the strongest antioxidants ever. And the reason we use quercetin, well, the other reason we use quercetin and vitamin C in that product is that when you release nitric oxide into the system, you have to make sure you control any type of other things that it's going to do to the body. So that's one of the other things that people don't do. They don't use the proper folate. They don't use the methylized activated folate. So when they try to do this, it simply doesn't work as well. God bless you guys. I appreciate you. Austin, go ahead and close.
Yes, we appreciate everything, guys. If you need anything, email us, call us, healthmasters.com. You guys have a safe, blessed night. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.